Hello, everybody, and welcome to another thrilling episode of Conspire a Theory podcast from Yiff Studio One, the Crimson Throne of the Yiff King, the YouTube and internet personality, Brandon the Chihuahua. Say hello.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show. And today, this show is going to be very fandom-based. We're going to have a little bit of paranormal in to sate your paranormal appetites. I know people just cannot get enough paranormal stuff. Go ahead and tell us about yourself, Brandon.
Well, I am a cosplayer. I do a lot of cosplay fandom-related videos on YouTube. I've been doing this about, gotta go 10 years now. It's actually a lot of fun. I enjoy it. I'm also a trans person, so I do a lot of that cosplaying only male characters because I kind of identify with that. So that's pretty much, you know, it. I also like do reviews on Supernatural and things like that.
Yeah, I've seen you doing tons of in-depth Supernatural reviews that just make my head spin. I mean, I respect the show and all that stuff, but I cannot get into it. I don't know why.
It's hard for everybody to, you know, some people just avoid it altogether because yeah. There's just so much now, so.
I get it, but I don't get it. But,
yeah, I understand what you mean, yeah.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and tell us again your YouTube channel.
Well, my YouTube channel is Brandon the Chihuahua. I also have a vlog channel, which is called Brandon Does Vlogs. I hardly post on there because my life is extremely boring. the YouTube channel is Brandon the Chihuahua. So you just look it up by Googling that or, you know, whatever, you'll find it.
Yeah, and the reason that I've asked you here is because you did a couple of reviews of a show that caught me by surprise, which was Miraculous, or here it's known as Miraculous, and it's the adventures of Ladybug and Cat Noir. In the original French, I believe it's just Ladybug and Black Cat, but because over here in the United States, Marvel has the license rights to the name Black Cat, they changed it to Cat Noir.
Yeah.
What was your first exposure to the series?
3 or 4 years ago, probably 3 years ago. I was goofing around on Tumblr, you know, you find anything on Tumblr, and I heard about this show that I had seen, like, the PV for, the anime version of, like, a trailer for it, like, a year prior, and so I didn't know that it came out, so I went and watched what I could find of it at the time, which was, like, 8 episodes into the series. And I just immediately fell in love with it. And I think like the day I finished all the available episodes, I went and started reading fan fiction. So I was a fan immediately.
Yeah. When I first came across it, it was during the, I think they were doing a pre-production animation of the first episode. It was just at the time, it was just, you know, animation project, French animation project. That's all that it was known as. And, you know, comic book, superhero, you know, that. And it was this animation that was floating around. It was unfinished. And I saw that and I said, oh, wow, that's really cool. I'll keep an eye on that for some time. I've been going through Target and I see on the shelves the DVD for the first half of the first season of Ladybug. And I'm like, wait a minute, that looks familiar. So I picked it up and then I took it home and, you know, it was just $10. So I was like, okay, that's nothing. I'll just throw in $10, like whatever. And then I blasted on the show and I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing show. I freaked out like, oh, this is such a cool show. Yeah, because one of my guilty pleasures, and that's kind of what this show is focused on, is, you know, the guilty pleasures. The guilty pleasures is I just love, you know, good shows, well-written animated shows. And this was one of those. It was sort of, I put it like right in there in the same vein of Avatar, the Last Airbender, yes, or Legend exactly. of Korra. It's one of those types of show. Now, before we get into the major show and we go all super duper nerdy, I heard that you had some paranormal encounters of your own. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about one, and then we'll do our little nerdgasm review, and then we can get into the rest of your paranormal history.
All right. Well, the first thing that I need to like say is I can astral project, which I did not know about. And this is a story. I was about like 14 and I had a dream that I was walking around the house and I woke up the next morning all rested. My mother told me, did you leave your bed? And I said, no, I dreamt about leaving my bed. Turns out I left my body during the night, which is very interesting. My mom could see me in her doorway and told me to go to bed and I just disappeared.
So basically she saw a projection of you, and then once she addressed it, it like I guess it poofed or lost grasp in whatever hold in reality it had.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the of the Awake Project or the Aware Project, I believe it was called?
No, I actually haven't.
Me and Rob went into details in the last episode about we were doing a review of the Stan Romanek story. And of course, I was, you know, laughing and poking fun because a guy got busted for kiddie porn. So of course, we made a huge joke out of it. But and then I asked Rob, who is a staunch skeptic, much like myself. And, you know, he told me about the Aware Project, which is where they tried to test people like having out of body experiences, collaborating it with like the evidence that they can find. Like they would write notes and they would put them on top of shelves that these people can't reach, and it would have like a number or a symbol, and then they would have to read the symbol. And of course, you know, some of them, yeah, they could do it because they were astral projecting out of their body, because they could get a perspective that was physically impossible.
Right.
And that was, you know, an intriguing thing. So when you were doing your astral projection, did you ever come across like any shadow people?
Not that I can recall. It's been so long, you know.
So I'm guessing you did it once as a fluke and since then kind of stayed away from it?
No, it happens on and off on its own. Sometimes I'll have it like every night and it'll just be like a person's apartment and then it'll just stop. I can't control it, unfortunately. I wish I had the power to, but it just happens whenever it wants to happen.
That's interesting. So you've got like no say in it. It's just whenever it feels like going on, it goes on type of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty intriguing. But what's even more intriguing is Ladybug and Cat Noir.
Yes.
Yeah, because every now and then, because you've done several episodes on this, and I know because I've watched them backwards and forwards, which is why I approached you for this episode. Ladybug and Cat Noir is, again, a French animation. But what I noticed was there was like a dramatic difference in the first season and the second season.
I completely noticed that as well. Like, I'm really avid on storytelling, and so I noticed it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, with most broadcast television, you know, I mean, it's a real, I've heard this done with Firefly, where they show the episodes out of chronicle order and the broadcast order. Yeah, the broadcast order doesn't always coincide with the episode order, and if you're telling an episodic tale, that screws up your storytelling so much. However, with the Ladybug season, what they did was every single episode sort of went along that family sitcom formula, where that Simpsons formula, where at the end of every single episode, the universe reset.
Yeah.
And in the first few seasons, the first two DVDs, which is like the first season half and the second half of the first season, I loved the characters. I was kind of getting to know about the world, but I knew absolutely nothing about Marionette and Adrian's origins as the characters of Cat Noir and Ladybug. I just knew nothing about the mythology of it. And then later on in the third disc is where they had their origin stories. And I guess they kind of did that on purpose, because I figured they'd just hook people in with the action, and then if they stuck around, then they could get in a little bit deeper into the story. And I think that was their first two-parter.
Yeah, it was their first two-parter, which I was really kind of happy about. I've noticed that, especially with like kids' shows, they'll dumb it down, but the second season really showed that they did not dumb it down like the first season, which is another thing that I noticed.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, that's another thing that I've seen too in some of the storytelling for some of these shows, because My Little Pony, yeah, because I'm a huge MLP nerd, you know, I'm one of the 40-year-old men, you know, knocking down 8-year-olds just to get to the exclusive you know, lemon gumdrop figure. But yeah,
I'm behind right now on the newest season.
Yeah, it's sort of a thing where you're writing to a young audience, but you're not talking over them. You're not like you're treating them like you would any other audience. For some television shows, they kind of get chastised for that. This is supposed to be child's television. You're supposed to tell dumb stories. You know, it's like they get locked in the closet or something, and then the rest of the episode is about them doing something stupid or something like that. Or you know, and it's just this ridiculousness. But the Ladybug and Cat Noir story, what I liked about it was sort of, it reminded me of like other shows, like posing myself admitting that I love these shows. But have you seen a show called Totally Spies?
I did when I was a little younger. It's not really my cup of tea, so kind of avoid it.
I don't know what it is about that show, but it's just, I love the hell out of it. I love those characters so much. And I guess it's that sort of dumb Valley Girl thing that just I find hilarious. But yeah.
Yeah, I could see where it would be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a fun sort of, you know, it's a fun sort of twist on the James Bond, Jason Bourne spy thriller with dumb high school girls. Marionette. Now, Marion, now for those who don't know what we're talking about, I realize we started talking about it and we haven't really set down the framework. In Ladybug, Ladybug has this character with her called a Miraculous, and it's, what is it, Tiki?
Tiki is a Kiwami, which is.
Yeah.
Is how they get their superpowers.
Yeah, go ahead and explain that for the audience, please.
Well, do I just start with the history of Miraculous?
Yeah, or? Go ahead. Just bring us into the lore. I want to see what you know of the lore.
Okay, let's see. Millennia ago, superheroes who hold these like objects, they have like a spirit of some kind, like a fairy. They're called Kiwami. And it helps the superhero with their superpowers and how to handle them. And eventually they'll be passed on to another person. If they're trustworthy enough, there is a person who holds on to all of them at once and is trusted with who gets to hold a Miraculous. With Ladybug, she has the earrings. With Cat Noir, he has a ring. And then there's like a handful of others that are currently out and about in the show.
Yeah, we haven't been introduced to them yet, but with Ladybugs, yeah. Her Kiwami holds the power of creation, and yes. Cat Noir's, his holds the power of destruction.
Now, and those are the most powerful ones.
Yeah, and in the first two episodes, I wasn't completely aware of that, because I thought that for the longest time, Cat Noir's power was to rust metal, because that's all he used it for, and I didn't realize that, he has the power of destruction entirely. And I think that's a pretty awesome dynamic where they have these two characters who are the polar opposites. And yet most people in most of our mythos and most of our comic book mythos, anybody who has a destructive power or anything, they're automatically the bad guys. Whereas in here, he's just another good guy. And exactly. I love that dynamic. And the character of Hawk Moth, I thought he was just like a regular supervillain, but it turns out he holds a Kiwami as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the one where he gains like some sort of influence over people or something like that.
It's I can't remember what it's called exactly, but it's a brooch of a butterfly, and he has the power to create an army of like they give the way that it works is he sends off a butterfly to take control of somebody who is willing.
Yeah, it calls it evilizing.
Yeah, and an army of his, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like his own little army that he can use he's supposed to use it to save the world, but in the show he does not.
Yeah, he instead uses it to try to steal the Miraculouses from Ladybug and Cat Noir. And what I love about the ongoing series is there's a lot of, in season one, all the characters, you know, they do things like, you know, we're introduced to all these characters, and they're kind of in a small way developing. Like you learn that Marionette's best friend, Alia. That Alia, her best friend, that later on you learn that her father is the zookeeper. And then you learn all these little things. And they have this small town, and the more episodes are, the more you learn about the people in the small town. But it's like hardly ever are any of the characters ever just one-off characters. Usually they're all part of a bigger picture. And that's what I kind of like, is that you're like sort of getting to know this city little by little as it grows.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that. And it's not just like you saving a random person and then you never see them again. It's really nice.
Yeah, it builds up this ongoing mythos of the characters. And one of the things that I've noticed in the season two is they have these ongoing episode arcs that last over several episodes, and we get to learn more about the characters and we get deeper into the characters. Like, say, for example, like Hawk Moth, you learn like later on towards the middle of the series, he's kind of a bit of a Thanos type of character.
Pardon me, but I don't know who Thanos is. Isn't that from...
that's from Infinity War. The big...
I'm big on superhero type stuff, except for Miraculous. It's pretty rare for me to like superhero things.
Yeah, the Thanos character, he's kind of like the guy who's like trying to save the world by destroying it or something like that. And,
oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, but in the latest Marvel incarnation, they build him up as a tragic figure where he's like, he feels he's doing the right thing. And with the character of Hawk Moth, there's this ongoing relationship that you see, this sort of strained relationship. Hawk Moth, it's not confirmed in the first season, but later on in the second season, we kind of learned that Hawk Moth is his secret identity, is actually Adrian's father. And Adrian's father, him and Adrian have this strained relationship. And a lot of it, I think, comes from the death of his mother, that his father is so engrossed in work and doing all this stuff and trying to, you know, build and keep his empire going. And that he doesn't make time for his son. And his son, you know, he feels the strain of the relationship, you know, not being able, being sort of like a stranger to his father, you know, speaking to him only in passing. And in kind of through Cat Noir, he gets to act out in a sort of, you know, have like, I guess, sort of, you know, like
he gets to have fun.
Yeah, pretty much. He gets to have fun because his home life is so boring. Because,
it is. You know, I feel so bad for Adrian. He just gets stuck in the house all day to study and do piano, and that's just not a way to live.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's in that world. Adrian is a celebrity. And there's this always this, you know, grass is greener on the other side dynamic. And Adrian, of course, you know, through Cat Noir, has this huge crush on Ladybug. And this is where we'll get into the love square, because it's not a love triangle.
Oh, the love square.
It's funny because Adrian loves Marionette, or not Marionette, but Ladybug. And Ladybug is Marionette, but Marionette has a thing for Adrian. But Adrian doesn't really know that Marionette is Ladybug, and it's just sort of this, it's a complicated dynamic. And
it's so complicated.
And I think there was this one time where it was in one of the later episodes of season two where Cat Noir got friend zoned by Ladybug.
He got friend zoned so hard.
And the funny thing is that he was, you know, he was very mature about it.
I'm so proud of him.
Yeah. I mean, every single other person, what happened? Let's bring up, as far as telling the audience what happened in the episode, was this was in one of the later episodes where Cat Noir asked Ladybug out on a date, and he set up like these candles and this little dinner and all this stuff. And it was so during romantic, the,
but she didn't show up.
Yeah, she didn't show up.
She thought it's a very complicated situation. Basically, Marionette was going to go out with friends, expecting Adrian to show up. Adrian did not show up to hang out. Unfortunately, because his father locked him in the house. And so Cat Noir is setting up this really romantic scenery, and Ladybug never showed, and it really broke his heart. And so he went to go talk to Marionette about how he was feeling, and they both felt heartbroken by each other.
Yeah, it was like a bit of a
tragic.
Yeah, it was a situation, and that's the thing about the miraculous and the superheroes. They can't tell each other's identities. They have to keep the identity secret, even from each other.
It's to protect their family and their friends.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like even there have been several close calls where, you know, sometimes Adrian is the target of Hawk Moth. And I think there was one episode where Hawk Moth, he actually suspected that Adrian was Cat Noir, and he sort of set up this thing to see if he could expose him. But after playing around, you know, they were able to quell his suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even an episode where I think he felt he had to akumatize himself, his alter ego, to get suspicion off of him. That
yes, yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and that was in one of the earlier seasons of season two. And that I felt was pretty, it was good writing. That was good writing there.
Very good writing. Honestly, I did not expect that because the first season was so dumbed down.
Yeah, it was just purely episodic. It was purely just like every single episode was its self-contained adventure. And in this one, there was an overlapping arc of, you know, him slowly suspecting and then figuring out. And throughout the ongoing episode, you kind of learn why he wants to gather all of the miraculous. It's sort of like a Dragon Ball Z type of thing where, you know, once you gather all the Dragon Balls, you get a wish.
You get to make a wish.
Yeah, and it's like he gets the ultimate prize for gathering all of them is, I guess, he gets a wish granted. And I think we know what the wish is that he's going to probably, you know, wish for his wife to come back to life. Because Adrian's mother, as we learn at the beginning of the series, she's been dead for about a year. And
from what I heard, actually, she's missing, but they didn't really say specifically in the show that she was dead. All I know is that she was missing. Yeah. Like, well, she had disappeared.
Well, as far as we know, as what's been led onto the audience, the character, Adrian, believes his mother is dead. And as far as, you know, that's what his father had told him, that his mother had passed away.
Right, but she's actually missing.
Yeah, and in the, I think it was the Christmas special, you know, that was like his first Christmas without her. So he's going through all this, you know, trauma, and he's like, I'm going to kill Christmas. And it was a good episode. It was a really good episode. I mean, I really want to get more into the series, because it's just, you know, I like it that Hawk Moth is coming off as a sympathetic character, that he wants to do, he does all this evil stuff, but he doesn't see himself as the bad guy. He does act in a sort of bad guy way, but he's doing this for what he feels is the greater good, which is, you know, getting his wife back.
Exactly.
Are there any of the other characters that you enjoy in the series?
Well, I think my personal favorite is, of course, Adrian. Mm-hmm. He is the sweetest and purest. I do enjoy Rose a little bit. I mean, she's kind of annoying.
Yeah. She's the one with the blonde with the short hair. She kind of has a high-pitched voice. She's a bit of a ditch.
Yes, yeah. But at times she can be cool, at times she cannot. And then there's Ivan, who is just a teddy bear.
Yeah, he's the sort of the large, burly guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
who can't sing.
There was an episode where he had a crush on another girl, and he kind of, like, you know, wrote her.
Yeah, it was actually the two-parter from season one.
Yeah, yeah, where he had, and throughout the rest of the series, you know, they're sort of a couple now, where he had. Yeah,
I'm very happy about that, too.
Yeah, because that was some good, you know, because you get to learn these characters and you get to deal with them. One of the things that I liked was, you remember in, like, I think it was there was the episode where their principal, Mr. Damocles, he turned into the owl.
Yeah.
But the
owl.
Yeah. He dresses up in this owl costume and he's like, I'm the owl. Hoo hoo. And it was cute. It was cute. Yeah.
The way that they went about the akumatized version of the owl, the dark owl, and the way they tried to get their miraculous was very clever.
Yeah, that was extremely clever. But one of the things that I noticed was in the episode prior, when I think it was Max, he's the class nerd. He had this AI, this floating AI unit, this sort of robot assistant that got akumatized. And the thing is, before...
Because he had emotions.
Yeah, and the thing is, when Mr. Damocles was taking, you know, his AI unit to the principal's office, he made a comment, an offhand comment about, you know, I'm actually doing programming my own little program. And then in the next episode, you actually see that. So they sort of did the whole, I think it's referred to as Chekhov's gun. You introduce the gun at the first episode, and then by the end of the third act or something, you have to use it or something. That's what they did. They introduced, you know, the whole that he's writing this program. And then in the second episode afterwards, you see what that program was for, is that he's using it for superheroing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a bit of a clever thing where, you know, you kind of have to really see that to really catch that and go, oh, so that's what that was, that little buildup there.
Exactly.
And when he tried to capture their miraculous, he came up with this elaborate trap to get them, and he almost pulled it off. You know, I'm not going to spoil it. It was really, really clever.
It was so good.
And it had me going. It had me going that maybe they actually did. He actually did to get it. But it was later revealed that that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah, but still, really good writing.
Yeah, what I like is how it's sort of, it's this mix, it's a mix of genres. A mix of the superhero genre and the magical girl genre. I remember seeing a meme that had, you know, it said like American magical girls, and it had this one show, like this Steve Universe-esque show, and then it said, you know, Japanese magical girls, and it has Sailor Moon, and then had Italian magical girls, and it has the Winx, and then French magical girls, and has a picture of Ladybug. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is sort of a play on that sort of high school magical girl. They do the high school thing, you know. It's sort of like, not really a modern high school, but it's sort of the kind of high school that you would expect to see in a John Hughes movie. And this old, like, romance.
I don't think I've ever seen a John Hughes movie.
You know, those are stuff like 16 Candles.
Okay.
And like adventures with the babysitter adventures, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, these old 80s, they have a kind of like 80s-esque type of high school that they go to. And it's very rare to see like a good show and, you know, for us to actually, you know, sit here and talk about it And it's good and it's fun. And I'm like, I really want to know what's going on, because in the later series, Alia actually gets hooked up with one of the Miraculous.
Miraculous. Yeah. Just for like one episode, but I really would have liked to see her like an official superhero.
Yeah, to have it done for an extended period of time. And when she did that, she actually made a reference to a previous episode where someone had, you know, was impersonating that Kwame, that specific Kwame, to sort of try to draw out Ladybug and Marionette. So for them to actually to go back in their own mythos and say like, yeah, oh, I remember this, you know, from a while back. That was pretty clever too, because it shows that, you know, that the people writing, they're actually paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
I hate that so often, because so many times I'll watch, what was it? Is the Defenders with, where in that one, in the Defenders, which is the Marvel superhero one, Clara, who is the night nurse, she doesn't know how to fight in the Defenders, but in Iron Fist, she learned how to fight. So by the new series, which came afterwards, they like the writers forgot that she knew how to fight. So she was written as this sort of this weak character. And it's like stuff like that. It bugs me. It really gets to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in that, this one.
And I understand that.
Yeah. And they're careful about that in this one. I think it was the last episode, because they're up to season two, the first half of season two on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
And that's where I definitely recommend getting it. I don't know if Nickelodeon has a streaming service. I know they stream episodes, but it's sporadic as far as what they'll actually let you see.
Yeah, there was a lot of issues with Nickelodeon releasing episodes at a certain time that I think something happened like in the offices that kind of had them a little wary, because there's like a few different people that are in charge of like the show and when it comes out and the promotional stuff, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they were having an issue with Nickelodeon releasing episodes when they needed to be released. And then there was the whole issue with season two, like what's going to happen with season two. And so they just decided they're not going to do Nickelodeon anymore. So they just went straight to Netflix, which I thought was a really good idea. That way we won't be waiting forever for episodes. This is what they did with the first season on Nickelodeon.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So from what I know, Nickelodeon doesn't have the rights to have any more, but I don't know if they still have the rights to the first season.
Yeah, because the first season, when I got those first few DVDs, a lot of them had the, you know, as seen on Nickelodeon, as the, you know, an official Nicktoon. Mm-hmm. And then I guess if they've decided to hop onto Netflix, you know, I hope they did. I hope that's the best thing for them, because then we finally get these episodes.
Yeah, that's how we got the first half of the second season. We're waiting on an announcement for the second part of the second season, which I'm hoping is like soon and not in like a year. Okay. I don't think I can wait another year for more episodes.
Yeah, me neither. It's a really good series. I heard that, I don't know if you had released this, that there was a panel in one of the panels where they said that the character Chloe, who is the, you know, the mean girl, that mm-hmm. she could possibly get a Kwame, the B Kwame.
It was rumored. I think like last summer, mm-hmm. they had a panel at San Diego Comic-Con, I believe. Mm-hmm. It could have been a different Comic-Con, but it was just a Comic-Con. And they did show like images. And from those images and, you know, people talking on, you know, Instagram and everything, she is going to get a Kwame and a Miraculous, but we don't know when and we don't know for how long.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because this is another character. Like,
half of the people getting akumatized is her fault.
Yeah.
But we saw in season two, what we have available right now, she is showing a little bit of, like, redemption.
Yeah, some character development.
I'm hoping that she turns herself around a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. With Chloe is a really interesting girl. You know, because all this stuff, this is all from the French perspective, but it seems like they're taking American, or what we would know as American archetypes, and turning them into characters in these series. One of the characters is Chloe, and she is this mean girl. She is basically the rich mean girl. Her dad is the mayor. She lives in a luxurious hotel. She has servants and everyone waiting on her. Basically, she's the closest to being Adrian's contemporary. She has basically all the ego, and everything just goes straight to her head. And in the second season, we kind of see her kind of chill and kind of, you know, tone it down a little bit, which is what I kind of like, you know, because, you know, I like her being the mean girl. I like her being the mean, nasty girl. And then when she shows some restraint, it's like it adds a level of depth to her character, which is something that, which is something very,
she's not just like a one type of person. Yeah.
Yeah. It adds dimensions to her as a character, because then she's not just, you know, the bad guy or the token, you know, the villain or something like that. And what I like is, you know, even the villain itself, Hawkmoth, even he is, even though he's doing, you know, bad things, like I said earlier in this episode, he's doing for what he believes is the right reason. So I guess I think that's pretty much all that we can say for the Miraculous Ladybug. And as of now,
spoiling a lot of things.
Well, this is a thing where you gotta like, but everything is on Netflix right now. Go check it out on Netflix. Yeah, Netflix is where I get most of the content that I like to do reviews on and talk about, and they got some good stuff on there. Every now and then,
great things there. There's so many good things.
Yeah, and some of their original content is pretty good. I'm not really getting into all of it, but some of it I do enjoy.
There's a handful of stuff I do like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when I'm not watching Miraculous, I'm really hard into the Amazon Prime's Thunderbirds Argo. They redid that series where it's like they still use miniatures, but instead of marionettes, they're using like CGI created characters, and they try to stylize them to look like the marionettes, and that's the most charming thing I've ever seen, and it's a good series. It's getting like, you know, stuff's getting serious in the later series. Yeah. So any final thoughts on Miraculous?
We did not talk much about the love square.
Okay, let's get...
We mentioned it a little bit.
I guess we teased. Okay, let's... What more detail do you want to get into then?
Well, we did mention that, you know, Adrian likes Ladybug and Marinette likes Adrian, but they don't know that they like each other.
Yeah, and Cat Noir likes Ladybug, but Ladybug, as far as, you know, I mean, Marionette, nobody knows that Marionette likes, well, everybody knows that Marionette likes Adrian, but Adrian doesn't know that Marionette likes her. And that's...
That Marionette likes Adrian.
Yeah. He's
very oblivious.
Yeah, he doesn't know that. And she's kind of, you know, being a bit distant with him, with her, you know, awkwardness, and she's sort of hiding behind that sort of awkwardness, which is that it's charming.
Adorable, actually.
It's believable as far as, you know, young people would go. You know, you would expect, it's like a well-written story. That's kind of the archetype that you kind of expect from a character like that, is for her to be, you know, awkward and reserved. I think one of the most telling episodes of this was the season 2 episode where the ice cream man, I think it was Andre the ice cream man, he got akumatized, and that sort of, you know, kind of put their dynamic out there. And then there was another one where they had like this giant baby, and her friends came up with this elaborate scheme to get her to talk to Adrian.
Yep. And she tried.
Yeah.
Didn't go very well though.
Yeah, that was a bit goofy. Missed opportunity where she tries to get close to him, and either Chloe gets in the way. Adrian and Chloe, they're close. They're sort of best friends.
Yeah, they've been friends since they were really young.
Yeah, they have that relationship, but it's not romantic. Even though Chloe kind of
thinks.
Yeah, she wishes that it was.
Yeah, but
she kind of forces
the love square. Yeah. It's very confusing.
Yeah, she kind of forces herself into him. And even though the costumes don't cover up that much of their identities, you know, they're completely oblivious because, well, you know, that's just the show, but it's hilarious how this woman, how Ladybug is walking around with the same exact hairstyle as Marionette.
Yes, exactly.
But nobody puts it together.
There was somebody showed why that could be a possibility by getting pictures of like famous people and erasing their eyebrows. And they look like completely different people if you get rid of the eyebrows, which kind of makes sense in a way. But I think it's just because, you know, cartoon logic.
Yeah.
they'll do whatever they can to make it make sense. So.
Yeah, cartoon logic.
Or, you know, magic. It's magic. That's why nobody can recognize them, type of thing.
Yeah. I remember in, what was it, when Alia was breaking it down. Alia was breaking it down, like, right before her and Marionette walked off to go do something, is that she was actually profiling Ladybug. And then she said, you know, she has to be either a student at our school, she has to be our age, she has to, you know, she has to live within this vicinity. And then, you know, she was getting awfully close, and Marionette was like, hey, you know, don't think so much about that. You know, she could just be an ordinary person.
And I'm kind of wondering, like, is that ever going to be a possibility? Are they going to be able to get Alia to find out that Marionette is Ladybug and how that might go about it? I'm really kind of hoping that that happens, as I really want to see where that goes.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is that Marionette knows who the guardian is, Master Fu.
Yes.
He's the keeper of the miraculous, as far as we know. She knows.
Apparently, he's been around doing that for a very long time, because he's, what, like 140-something? 150, I think?
Yeah, and his Kwame is, I guess, the turtle one?
Yeah. It's a jade bracelet.
Yeah, and I guess that sort of comes with longevity. I guess that's sort of his superpower. Yeah,
because turtles have long lives, so that would make complete sense.
He knows who Marionette is, and Marionette knows who he is. And she goes to him. She's been going to him a lot more as more problems develop. And I have to wonder, is there going to be a time where he goes to her, or where she goes to him, and then Adrian finds out, and then he has to go to Master Fu? Because Adrian, he doesn't know who Master Fu is.
Exactly, yes.
So may there be a time where what's his Kwame's name? Blep or something? Flep?
I can't even remember. It's been a little while.
All I remember is he loves Camembert cheese. And he cannot get enough of
Plague, it. Yeah, it's Plague.
Plague. Is it Plague might... Yeah, Marionette's Kwame got sick, and then she had to go to the Master Fu to get healed. And I wonder if something similar is going to happen to Plague, where he has to expose Adrian's identity to save, you know, to save his life.
Right.
And if that's going to lead to, you know, more complications, like, is he going to have to keep them separated? Because that's pretty much them not knowing each other is sort of the Ross Rachel of the show. That once that is exposed, then the entire dynamic of the show is going to completely change.
Yeah.
And by then, you know, that's not something that they can undo. And that causes a lot of, you know, well-written tension throughout the show. So as far as that, you know, I'm betting that he's not going to expose their identities to one another. That he'll expose.
I feel like he knows that, you know, their identities have to be kept a secret from one another. I mean, he's been doing it for years. So it would make sense that he would know that.
Yeah, I did like it when they would go into where Alia figured out that Marionette, or not Marionette, that the Ladybug Mythos went into ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. And she found, like, ancient scrolls and stuff about it. And, like, Adrian's father got akumatized. He had, you know, the booklet, which had all the ancient, which it was basically a record keeping of the
miraculous holders.
Yeah, the miraculous. Yeah, the miraculous phenomenon. And they had, like, stuff from feudal Japan and all that stuff. It's just, I would really like it if they were to do either a flashback or a time travel episode where they actually take us to ancient Egypt or feudal Japan.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I would love to see that where, like, either, you know, one of the Okamis, like, they reminisce about, you know, oh, do you remember when back? And then we get back to an old episode of Ladybug, you know, during the feudal Japan areas. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess, are we going to close the book on that, on Miraculous for right now?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so go ahead and tell me the rest of your paranormal history.
Oh, wow. Well, there's only a handful of people in my family that I know of. My grandfather on my mother's side has the ability to guess the gender and birth date just by touching a pregnant woman's stomach. Hmm. So far, he has gotten everybody right except for one of my sisters. And that's only because he didn't touch the belly. He only just guessed. And then my mother can hear ghosts. or spirits and have conversations with them.
Okay, so she's clairaudient?
I guess that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's sort of like
the... There's also like a Wiccan pagan, I think. So she very much dabbles in talking to spirits often. I always ask her, like, is there somebody here? Because things keep happening or whatever. And then one of my sisters, my youngest sister, she can see ghosts a lot. Like, they're everywhere. And then there's my middle sister, who's in between me and my youngest sister, who has premonition dreams. And then there's me, who can just leave my body sometimes when they want to.
So how old is your youngest sister?
I think she turns 20 this year, maybe 21. I can't really remember. Probably 21 this year.
Hmm. And she's been seeing ghosts since when?
Since as long as we can remember. My mother would tell me stories that a specific one where she would befriend a kid in a hospital, but that kid hasn't been around. The kid's dead, so.
Yeah, like anything in-house?
Some of my grandparents would sometimes float around. There was a time where I was living in a house in Florida. There was a very, very mean man living there, a spirit, and he hated locked doors and the hallway light. So he would often lock our doors and have us break our doors to get it open, and we turned the light off a lot.
Hmm.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that does sound troubling. You said that your mother was pagan, a practicing pagan. That's interesting. I'm trying to learn more about the pagan arts, and there's a local San Antonio chapter that I'm trying to get in contact with and get them on the show to talk about, you know, paganism and the myths and misconceptions and stuff like that. Like, a lot of our modern culture and modern superstitions often come from pagan practices. Like, yeah. Christmas and stuff is like four or five different pagan rituals and holidays all mashed together under, you know,
and Easter too.
Yeah, and it's just sort of this, and it's been like sort of bastardized by Christianity. And now people are like, oh, we have to, you know, you can't celebrate Christmas or something like that.
People are getting, it's something ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's like, well, it's not really a war on Christmas, because Christmas is so many different things.
And there's a very long history about how Christmas came to be today.
Yeah, I think I'd
rather not get into it. Just, you know, there was an episode about from Adam Ruins Everything.
Yes, I know. Yeah, so I saw that one.
If you want to know all about that, just go watch that episode.
Yeah, that was a pretty good episode where, like, basically people brought the practices over here, and the local people were like, ah, rubble, 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 you can't have Christmas. And then eventually the culture just overwhelmed it. And now it's like, you know, we have Santa Claus on the pop bottles, and he's a, you know, there are some interpretations of like some pagan interpretations and pagan characters and stuff like that, like Krampus and the Belsnickel, and
that's one I haven't heard of.
Yeah, I mean, I can point you to some paranormal podcasts where they talk about, you know, Christmas episodes and Christmas lore and stuff, and all these scary demons and monsters of Christmas, like the Yule Cat, where if you didn't have new clothes, he would eat you.
Wow.
and it's just so fascinating. And that's why, you know, I want to get into the whole, you know, talking to a pagan about these things, because I know that people get upset about what they call cultural appropriation. But the thing is, culture has been so mismatched and I guess I could say appropriated so much that a lot of what we consider modern stuff is the amalgamation of several different cultures.
Yes, exactly.
And I think, you know, learning about those cultures is a fascinating thing, because then we can differentiate, like, well, this is from this culture, and when we're doing this, we're actually honoring this culture. And when we do like this, we're actually honoring that, you know, like with Esther, which was the Easter Bunny. It's like, it's a fertility thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the rabbit is sort of this, you know, it's sort of an avatar of this spirit and stuff like that. And it's so much fascinating history into that. And that is just perfect fodder for paranormal studies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you ever want to come back on and discuss any of those issues, I would love to have you come back.
So if I find, you know, an interesting thing that I've learned, maybe. I'm not really into big religion types of stuff, but I do look into some things that I find interesting, like, you know, Satanism and
Yeah. Anything, you know, paranormal related that we can come and have fun, or we'll probably like the second half of season two of Miraculous Drops. I'm definitely going to bring you back and we'll talk some more stuff, but
that's nice.
Yeah. But this has been great. This has been great. So, tell me again, where can people find you? YouTube, well, you can find me on Twitter.
You can find me on YouTube, Brandon the Chihuahua. So youtube.com/Brandon the Chihuahua, pretty easy to remember. And I also do Twitch streams where I play video games. If y'all want to see me, I mainly do like PC games and things like that. But I do reviews on like Supernatural TV show. And I also did some on Miraculous. I was pretty good about that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and by finding those, we can find the rest of your channels and stuff and where to keep up with you. Okay, that's good. That's good. I got to say, though, I got to ask you about YouTube, though. I know that they do. Do you do the monetizing? Like, are you a partner through them?
I used to be, but then they changed the rules on us, so I'm not anymore. I'm trying to get back up to being a partner again, so... Yeah. It's been pretty difficult.
Yeah, when I guested on Chris James Strange Things, I'll be sure to, he's going to let me put the episode up on this channel. We talked a lot at length about YouTube and stuff, and I was listening to some of my friends on another show called the Holy Nerdy Podcast, and they had a prominent YouTuber, I guess his name was Maddox X or something. He's like a Dragon Ball Z bigwig. And he was talking about, and they were talking about, you know, the YouTube stuff and trying to make a living off of that. And it seems like, you know, and I know I follow tons of YouTube, I guess, celebrities like the Black Nerd, Comic Book Girl 19, all these people who do like reviews and stuff, and they're big names, they're household names. Well, in my household, they're names. And every single time YouTube like regurgitates or redoes their user agreements, it's like you would think that the sky was falling and these people are like releasing videos like, oh, YouTube, how could you do this to me? You know, and it seems like it's the end of the world every single time that they, you know, cross another T or dot another I on their contract. And as far as like the monetization goes, you know, so that's why I kind of have to ask, because, you know, I mean, you're in that world. I'm not. I do have a YouTube channel, and I really, really need to start putting up my episodes on that. But I just find it so fascinating. And I guess what people are doing now is, do you have a Patreon?
Yes, I do. I do have one. I also have it linked on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, go ahead. Give us the direct link to your Patreon.
If I can remember. It's been a while since I've updated it because I just moved recently, so I've had a lot of things going on all at once. But Patreon is, you know, Brandon the Chihuahua, pretty easy to find.
Yeah, because I noticed that like what a lot of people do now is, you know, they'll have YouTube, but then they'll have like backup. They'll have Patreon. And on a lot of the I was listening to this one podcast. It's like, you know what, dude, with Robert Kelly, he would have an option where you could like sponsor him through Litspin, the podcasting streaming service that would host his site. And now it's gotten to the point to where he's actually telling people to stop that, to unsubscribe that, and instead hop over to his Patreon, because the Libspin, it would go into them and they would sort of like, you know, it would go in and they would do like the trickle down effect where they would like, you know, give him his stuff. So instead now, sort of the big thing now is to just have a Patreon and use just that for your funding, instead of relying on YouTube and stuff like that. And I kind of, when people kind of have their eggs all in one basket, I mean, I guess if you're a big deal like PewDiePie and Mark Pliers, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
When you're like a big dog like them and those guys, you know, they
that much.
Yeah, they rarely ever screw up because they're, you know, because if they...
They've been in the game for a while.
Yeah, and they're making, you know, millions of dollars. And on Twitch, there's this guy Ninja, and he's making like $500,000. Like,
that is the life right there.
Yeah, and he's just streaming, you know, Fortnite, and he's, everyone keeps saying he's friends with Drake. And I'm like, okay, I don't think that's
all
why.
All because he had one match with him. Like, get over it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't think that's why people are giving him $5,000, like every other month. You know, I really don't think that has to do with it, but that's, you know, people have to sort of point that out. And it's just, yeah, and it's just the monetization of it. So, I mean, I don't have many dogs in the fight. So when I meet other people like yourself who are a bit more ingrained to it than I do, I just have to kind of, you know, poke your brain a little bit. So if you don't mind me getting into there.
By all means, go ahead.
Yeah. And I just find it interesting. So good luck to you on that. And to hope your Patreon, more people contribute to it and help you out and stuff like that.
I hope so too. I've got only 2 people on there right now. But oh yeah, if you know, if somebody wants to join Patreon, you can also be part of my Discord server. I try and get people to talk on there. People are usually quiet, but hopefully if people join my Discord also, as well as Patreon, maybe we'll have some conversations going on there as well.
That's good, because you got like 200% more people on your Patreon than I do. But yeah, thank you for spending time with us, and we will see you next time.
All right.
To email the show, write to ConspireAtheory, all one word, conspireatheory@outlook.com. Music provided by Killer. Find her at soundcloud.com/KiraKura. If you want to find me around the internet and maybe commission me for some artwork, a few good places to find me would be at DeviantArt. You could find me there at chrisholm.deviantart.com. That's Chris, ChrisHolm. deviantart.com. I can also be found on Tumblr at psychris.tumblr.com. That's psychris.tumblr.com. I can also be found on FurAffinity. You can find me on furaffinity.net/user/psychris/. If you'd like to connect with me on Facebook, I'm available at Facebook.com/ChrisHolmComics. You can also find me on Twitter at PsychoChris. Be sure to find me, check out some of my art, and if you'd like, tell me some of your stories.